Jim Croce and James Taylor. They each have a song that made my favorites. I chose 100 songs from the 60s forward that I put in my favorites. I See Fire and I See Rain. It makes me tear up every time I hear it because I know the story behind it. And then, of course, James Croce, I mean, a man named Jim, and I mean, wow, you know? What a great song, right? Peter Rollins is a philosopher, theologian, Irishman. Do you know him? It's okay, Sam. Most people don't. He talked about how he said at one point, if at 2 a.m. in a bar packed with people, you were to bring up the house lights and turn off the music, what you would see is eyes full of pain. And I thought about that when you were singing your first song. I think there might be some truth in that. So what have you seen that you can't unsee? My father was a World War II vet. He was a medic. He was in Europe for 2 years. He was in London or in England on England's soil on June 6th, Normandy Beach, Omaha Beach, D-Day, tending to the wounded who were brought back over. And he would say about them, those poor socks. Then 10 days later, his unit was sent to Omaha Beach. And my brother and I were able to bring up all these orders and follow his journey all the way to Nuremberg. He followed the troops all the way to Nuremberg in a medic unit. And it said on the orders for cleanup duty. And you can guess what that was. He was at the liberation of Dachau concentration camp. These things haunted my father his entire life. He could not unsee what he had seen. What do you know that you can't unknow, right? If you, like me, have lost both your parents, then you know you're next. At least you hope you're next. Because the alternative is that your child will be next, or your grandchild will be next. And some of you know that, and you can't unknow that either. What you know is that stuff can happen. My brother went in for what he thought was a blocked bowel here 3 years ago, and that night in the hospital he found out he had lymphoma, aggressive lymphoma, and had to go through chemo treatments. Now, he survived them, but what is an uh-oh moment for you? A pastor I know from a community in Northwest Iowa, where I was raised. Northwest Iowa is the place, in fact, where this pastor pastored his church was 10 miles from where Donald Trump did rolled out his stump speech at a place called Dort College in Sioux Center, Iowa. It was there where he first said I could shoot somebody in Times Square and I wouldn't lose support. And he was loved there, cheered there. He found his audience there and he found his speech there. Well, this pastor was the pastor of the First Reformed Church there. So now you have an idea who this pastor is. And his church was then doing an expansion of the parking lot. And so because they wanted to be good neighbors, he went out with fruit baskets to all the homes around the church to say, yeah, we're doing this expansion. It's going to be noisy. It's going to be disruptive. But we want to be good neighbors, and if there's ever any problems, let us know. And the first home he went to was right next to the church, and a young man answered the door, and he said, I'm the pastor from over there. And the guy said, come on in. And he went in, he brought him in the living room, and he introduced him to his husband. And they sat him on the couch, and they got him a cup of coffee, and they talked to him, they listened to him, and they said, don't worry, it's okay, glad you're expanding, so forth and so on. What are you doing? And he said, well, I'm going to go to around to the next. Oh, you're going to go to Ethel next, they said. Ethel's their next-door neighbor. She's a widow. We'll walk you over there. So one of them walks him over there, and Ethel can't say enough about these two young men and what they mean to her and what they do for her. They bring her a meal once a week. They mow her lawn. They clean her walks. And for this pastor, that's an uh-oh moment, because all of a sudden, he realizes that the hospitality they showed him, they would not receive in his church. And that in many ways, they were more Christ-like, more Christian, more Jesus followers than most of the people who sat in front of him every week. That's an uh-oh moment, right? Have you had those? So I was raised 20 miles from there, a little town called Boyden, Iowa. 500 people in the town, all white, of course. One Catholic family. Brian Zimmerman was born on the same day I was, and to my mother's credit, we used to celebrate our birthdays together. If you weren't raised in Boyden, Iowa in the 1950s and 60s, you don't know what that means, that a Protestant woman would share a birthday celebration with a Catholic woman's son. I do know what that means. I was raised to believe that people of color were inferior to white people, that women were not capable of leadership like men were. I was raised to believe that homosexuality was against the natural order that God created, that they were deviants. And so I had to unlearn these things. And it's a lifetime process, because I still struggle with these same prejudices. If I'm driving behind a car that's going slowly, I assume it's an old woman. If I'm held back in the grocery line and I look over and I see a person of color checking out, I assume there's problems with their food stamps. If I see a person, a woman, a young woman, pushing a shopping cart, carrying everything in it that she owns, I assume that she's mentally ill or addicted or has chosen this lot, and therefore she is what she is, and there's nothing I can do about it, and so I really don't have to care. I still have trouble when I'm watching a TV show and two men kiss. The goal is not perfection. The goal is progression. And it's a lifelong pursuit. At least it is for me. Deconstruction is a word that is used today as mostly about religious things. Really, it's a term that comes out of philosophy. The ancient Greeks were deconstructionists. I would submit to you that Jesus was a deconstructionist, so was John the Baptist. And John the Baptist and Jesus both kind of innovated the idea that repentance was as important as simply bringing an offering to the temple to please an angry God, that repentance was a lifestyle. Repentance was a daily activity. And Alcoholics Anonymous picked up that theme. One of the great spiritual movements in American history is AA, in my opinion. Now, you don't have to agree with me on any of this. I'm okay with that. I'm used to it, as a matter of fact. So, deconstruction as a movement is the idea of dismantling things in order to get to the foundation or to the root where you could find the idea that was behind the poem or behind the song. Sam, it would be interesting to sit down with you and try and get to the idea that was behind the song you wrote, the two songs you wrote. I mean, because that's deconstruction. It's listening to the song and then dismantling it to try and figure out what was happening with Sam at that time. What was his idea? What was he thinking? What's the root to this? And then do I agree with it or not? And I might say, I do, or I might say, I reject it. Chances are I would like it a lot. But, you know, that's very threatening to a lot of people, especially when you're talking about sacred writings, right? Or sacred thoughts or sacred ideas. To have somebody say to you, you can dismantle that idea or that writing, and then you can choose to reject it. My family's involved in Israel-Palestine and have been now for almost 20 years. My wife and I moved there in 2006, lived there for 5 years, Jerusalem. Our son is now involved there. One of our trips, we went way down south where right next to Gaza is where we were that day. And we could hear Israeli jets low-flying over Gaza just to bug the people. Sonic booms and all of that. They did it routinely. This was back years ago. And our son was leading that particular trip, and he was doing something on the Bible, and he presented ahead of time to them five different ways they could read the Bible. And one was literally, the other was whatever, that what's true is what the Bible intends to teach, and then all the way up to five where the Bible's a book, like any other book. It needs to be read like a book. It needs to be analyzed like a book, like any other book. Then you could choose in between. And we stood in a circle, and people talked about where they were. And it was fascinating. People were, nobody was a one. Nobody would come with us. It was a one, let's just be honest. I mean, they know who we are by now, right? You know I am by now, too, right? So, two, three, four. And then a woman's turn to speak, 60s. A Christian Reformed church pastor's wife. And she said, well, I'm a four. And which is that I think there's sacred truth in it, but mostly I almost a five, right? And she tells a story about her daughter who's lesbian. And she finds out about this when her daughter brings home her partner. And it's a shock. Even though she would say, it shouldn't have been, right? And she said, when this came out then, my daughter said, not living in the closet, I'm not living in the shadows, this is who I am, I'm not ashamed of who I am, I'm not ashamed of who my partner is, I'm gonna live this, and mom and dad, this is just going to be the way it is. And mom and dad embraced her. To their credit, took a while. No. And she said, you know, friends of mine would come up and say, Romans 1, or maybe it's Romans 2, I forget. It's the one that Paul talks so starkly and so ferociously, and I think mean-spiritedly, but I want to give Paul the benefit of the doubt, right? His experience of homosexuality, of same-sex relations are different than ours. And she said, I just want to say that that does not describe my daughter. And it transformed our whole trip. All of a sudden, we were free to be transparent. We were free to express where we were. And that trip was one of the best trips that I'd ever led or been a part of. Because somebody dared to say, this is my struggle. And she said, I reject Romans 1 if it talks about my daughter. She's not that. So deconstruction often gets put in the religious scene, but it's really a lifelong process of progression. I'll just tell two quick stories. Can I do that? 5 minutes? Okay, I can do that. Well, maybe I can't. I'm going to eliminate the first one, and I'm going to scroll down to the end because there's one I want to encourage you to go to NPR, or no, National Public Radio, right? And if you're a podcast listener, if you're not, you want to listen to the podcast called White Lies. It was done by two young Southern men. And it's the story of the murder of James Reeb. You remember James Reeb? Unitarian pastor who in 1965 was killed during the voting rights movement in Selma. This was the person who became the martyr of the civil rights movement used by Lyndon Baines Johnson and everyone else, even though just prior to a young black man by the name of Jackson was murdered by a police officer. And if anyone should have been the face of the civil, it's him. But a white man worked. And for years, for 50 years, the lie in Selma, Alabama, told by white people was that James Reeb was killed in an ambulance, murdered in an ambulance by his two Unitarian pastor colleagues in order to make him a martyr. That was the story told by white people in Selma, Alabama for 50 years until these two white Southern men came and said, we're going to deconstruct that story. And they dismantled it. And you need to listen, or you don't need to, I would encourage you. It is fantastic what they did. And I want to just give you this quote by Andrew Beck Grace, one of the young men, and then I'll close with this. The story of Jim Reeb's murder occupies a strange place in our country's history. As we reported this story and discovered the lies that had been crafted to hide the truth about his murder, we saw a chance to correct the narrative. And as white Southerners, we felt a responsibility to do so. So my challenge to myself and to you is, if you've seen something you can't unsee and you think it's important, if you know something you can't unknow and you think it matters, you and I have a responsibility to speak into that. And we can use our own tools to do so. Sam does it with song. Yeah? I do it like this. Yeah? You have tools too, and I just want to encourage all of us. There are things we need to find ways to say so we can be heard or not. So thank you for having me.